Good morning. Bruce Kirkland from the Toronto Sun. This is a question for Michael Douglas and Oliver Stone, because you are the returnees on this particular franchise. And having done the interviews for the original, very few of us knew at the time this would, the original film would become like an icon of that went beyond cinema, that it was actually a this document about American corporate culture and corruption. And it predicted a lot of what would come true. Was there any trepidation of treading that territory again, especially in the middle of the nightmare that that film had predicted?
Bruce, I'd just point out that Ed Pressman is also a returnee. He was the original producer with Wall Street. And frankly, 23 years is a long time, so you can walk away and come back. I felt very positive because so much had happened and the greed factor had multiplied so much. The other factor was that when, you know, the movie starts with Gordon coming out of jail, so he's a busted man, and he's got no family waiting for him, and he has no real money. So it's another approach. I mean, if he'd come out as Gordon Gekko, the former Gordon Gekko, it would have been a long haul for us, I think, to go to the end of the movie, because it would have been, frankly, I thought tedious. I thought we had a good approach from the bottom of the barrel up, and that gave it the jism that we needed.
No, I truly felt that, rather than having to repeat the archetype from the first one, that he set up was a guy from starting from the bottom of the barrel with one hand tied behind his back. He could not trade. He did not have any money. He was alienated from his only living blood relative, his daughter, lost a son to drug overdose while in jail. So it was a great arc to come over.
Ed, care to add anything? Okay. Question over there.
Hello.
Then over here, then over there.
Hugues Daillé, Belgian TV. It's a question for Mr. Oliver Stone. Thank you for the movie. The movie is dealing with many different themes, and of course there is the theme of the competition in the world of money. Surprisingly, the movie is not in competition here in Cannes. Is it your choice, and what do you think about competition in the world of cinema?
I don't. I think it's a dangerous attraction and addiction, and I think people go crazy because of it. I think Woody Allen once, who's also here tomorrow night, made the point one time with the Oscars that it does drive people crazy. And I know we all like competition and it's good, but we all sort of do compete by making movies, but we all learn from each other, we really do. And you take scenes, you know, we steal from everything. We steal from the bad movies too. So it becomes une bouillabaisse à la fin.
Ma'am?
Yes, my name is Daphne. I'm from VPRO, Dutch television. I have a question for Mr. Stone. After the first Wall Street, you said that you were surprised by the number of people that were inspired by the film and took on a job on Wall Street. Was that in the back of your mind making this film? And what was the biggest emotion that you wanted to leave your audience behind with?
Completely different. Completely different. This is a story about family. This is a story about people who are balancing their love of power and money with their love of their need for love. And I think that's really what it comes down to with everybody. Everyone in this set, every single of the five actors are on this, betray each other at some point in the movie. Even Carrie, who Henri called the moral center. Even Carrie. So there's all, you'd have to go to each character, and I think you should ask each one the ambiguity of their character and what they feel. But certainly Michael represents a man looking for money and power to get back in, yeah. But what does he really want? And that is a question we go right down to the end with, and I don't want to give away, of course, the ending, but I think it's a good question. I think that's what it's about. Whereas the original movie, Charlie Sheen started with integrity. Charlie Sheen started with a lack of integrity. And I think he found it later in the movie through his father and through other people. Here, I think Shia and Carrie represent sort of a moral center at the beginning of the movie. And, of course, they're going to be tested.
Question over there.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Karim Kujuk, and I'm here representing the Arab Radio and Television. Actually, I have a couple of questions, the first of which would be to the director, Mr. Oliver Stone. Sir, after watching both parts of Wall Street, can we say that you're a little bit anti-capitalism and that you consider money as, let's say, we can say a weapon of massive destruction? That's one question. And the other question would be for Mr. Douglas. It has nothing to do with the movie. It's rather personal. How does it feel to be Michael Douglas? That's it. Thank you.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how to answer that question because I'm confused, as are many people in the world right now, whether capitalism in its present form can work. It seems not. It seems that it's excessive and unregulated. And I would love to see serious reform. It's going on in the United States, but there are tremendous issues worldwide. I mean, it goes to Greece and England and Spain and Portugal and so forth. I don't know where it's going to go. It seems that we got drunk. We got in 1987. I thought it was going to correct itself. I really did. I thought the system will correct, but it didn't. It got worse. The labor wages of the American worker flattened out in 1973, but the productivity of the United States went way up. So there was a tremendous gap between who made money and who didn't make money, and that gap is reflected in the CEOs' salaries of the companies and in the stockholders. Stockholders and CEOs made money, but working people did not. There's a tremendous inequality and injustice in that, and that has to be corrected.
Michael, how does it feel to be Michael Douglas?
Well, who we are and how we feel, I think, depends every day. What is going on? Right now, I'm personally very, very happily married with two young children. It's giving me tremendous thrill. Career-wise, I'm very proud of Money Never Sleeps. Had a wonderful time making this picture with a tremendous cast. I also have a small independent movie that I'm very proud of called Solitary Man that's coming out. So both my professional and private life is good. Saying that, if one takes a look at the world, and I work, as you know, with the United Nations, it's pretty disappointing. And we wonder where it's going ahead. In the area that I work on, and which is elimination of nuclear weapons, there seems to be some great movement going ahead. But as you do look at the greed, as the oil spills are going on, volcanic ash, the earth seems to be speaking back.
Since we started the press conference a second, we've been discussing the moral core of the film, the moral aspect to each character. It's pretty obvious as far as Miss Mulligan's character is concerned, and I would assume Mr. LeBouf. From those people who are inside the Wall Street world, how do you, as actors, balance the absolute monstrosity of what is required from you and the humanity that somehow lies inside the character? Forget morality, but at least humanity. Mr. Lancella?
I don't think people change. I think the game changes. And in terms of my character, the game has changed. If he were in the position that Josh is in the movie or Shia, he would do the same thing they do. You know, he's just an old lion whose time has passed and he's fighting to stay alive. But if he had some of the control that the younger men had, he'd do the same thing. He is described sometimes as more moral than the others, but he's not. He's just fading away, and that makes him somewhat sympathetic. But I don't think he's any less of a killer than the new crowd coming up.
Mr. Brolin,
what was your question? The morality of how I feel, as opposed to the morality of what the
character
is doing.
When you have to play that character, how do you balance the both aspects of being a shark or being a killer and being, after all, a human being, whatever that means?
I think Brett and James, I mean, look, you're a human being first and foremost. I think the fact that he's so ambitious, like Charlie Sheen in the beginning, who finds his morality in that version of that movie, whereas this guy is, Brett and James, is dealing with no ceiling because of no regulations or any of that. So, you know, the theme of the first movie is greed is good, and the theme, I think, of this film is more. You know, there's no end to the possibilities of accumulation. And I think having traded myself on a very, very small level, I understand what it is to get caught up in that moment of greed where you go, I understand the kids are upstairs and they need to eat, but if I have 15 more minutes, I may make that much more money. And then they'll be able to eat more when, honestly, they're not eating. That's the reality of the situation. So to tap into that greed and to allow yourself to lose your identity and reconfigure your identity within that is, morally completely bereft. And that was an interesting thing to be able to play with in this movie.
Mr. LeBouf.
Hi. Jake's situation is interesting because he's battling with, you know, who he wants to be with personally and where he wants to be professionally. And they go hand in hand almost. He's a person who was picked out of obscurity by a man named Louis Zabel, put through Fordham by this man, hired right out of business school. This man was my father figure because my father drank himself to death. And this is a man who defined himself on his profession. Bretton James essentially attacks him in a room at the Fed, ruining his definition of himself, ruining the firm, causing him to commit suicide. Jake becomes very vengeful. Who better to ask for advice on revenge than Gordon Gekko? And so he's speaking at my school, and I go to see him. Against the will of my fiance Winnie, who wants nothing to do with this man, because he was about himself the whole time, and she also blames him about the loss of her father. So Jake's in an interesting position because it's a balancing act. It's what Josh has talked about, and he's in a high stakes world. And he's a very young man. So there.
Your problem, Ms. Mulligan, was slightly different, actually the opposite. How not to appear to be the saint of the piece.
Yeah, I think she's rebelled so far from what her father did that she's got incredibly, incredibly strong ideals to the point where she dismisses $100 million, which is silly, really. I think she's with a Wall Street trader, which is a dichotomy in itself, but that she believes that he's the best version of a Wall Street trader, that he's doing it for the right reasons, and that there are good and bad people in every profession, and that this is something that he's talented at and he's skilled, and if he can use that talent and that skill to make the world better, then it's not a bad thing. But she's not flawless, and she's incredibly stubborn, and she's not forgiving. She can't forgive, and... So there's not sainthood there. There's definitely her father's in her somewhere.
Thank you. Sir, and then sir.
Hi, I'm Christian Jungen from NZZ am Sonntag in Switzerland. This is for Oliver Stone. First of all, it was nice to see Zurich with red trams. They are blue, but they are nice as well in red. But my question is, when did you start to think about making a sequel, and how did... burst of the financial crisis change things?
Well, it was actually Michael Douglas and Ed Pressman approached me in 2006, and I didn't want to celebrate that culture of wealth. There didn't seem to be a point. It was ongoing, and it just seemed to be getting worse and worse. There was no reason to make the movie. After the crash, of course, all bets were off, because really it was a major heart attack. I mean, it was a triple bypass. I think they put a stent in, but I'm not sure if they've solved it. So this is serious, and it puts the whole world into a new perspective. Its time had come back, and Gordon Gekko and Michael and Ed were right. They came back to me in 2008 and with a second script, which was better, much better, and it became the basis of this movie. And thank you for doing that, Ed and Michael. Thank you for believing in me. Getting back there. It had to be done. I mean, this is time has come.
Question over here, and then over there, and then coming down.
Hello, my name is Parviz Jahed. I'm from Iran, a film critic, and my question is to Mr. Oliver Stone. I heard that you were planned to make a film about Iran's president, Mr. Ahmadinejad, but you have been refused after a couple of correspondence, and I wonder if you still want to make that film and follow that project, and what do you feel about the relationship of Iran and the U.S. and at this critical situation?
In 25 words or less.
Well, briefly, it was just a comedy of errors because we had approached him. They said no, then they said yes, but I was doing another movie at the time, W, about George Bush. I felt strongly at the one point that if we had America had succeeded in Iraq, there would be no question that George Bush would have been encouraged to go into Iran, and I thought there was a war coming. So when we were interested again, then they were uninterested, and then they got interested. It's been ridiculous, so we forgot about it, and I went on to do some Latin American presidents and so forth. So my life moved on, too. But it's an ugly situation. I don't know who's lying and who's telling the truth, but I do know there's been a lot of false intelligence.
Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I'm Yuvi from Israel Today in Israel. My question is to Mr. Douglas. Recently, you celebrate your 65th birthday, if I'm not wrong. So, yes?
Thank you.
You're looking good. You're looking good.
Thank you.
Mazel tov. And the question is it easier or harder to be a mature actor in Hollywood? And how do you choose your roles today? You spoke about independent movie, for example. So why did you it? And a question for all of you, do you believe in Wall Street and did you ever invest your money on stocks? Thank you.
Like they're going to tell you.
Why not?
Well, the parts get limited as you get older. There's certainly less studio-type parts, unless you're going to be a villain, and much more interesting independent parts that exist. It just is very tough now with the financing, very, very tough to finance independent movies these days.
And the second part of the question is, has any of you invested on Wall Street?
Have any of us invested? Any of us invested in Wall Street?
Yeah.
Sure. Absolutely.
Jeff Shaya is an expert.
Yeah.
I did out of sheer necessity. You know, I walked into this, I'd made five action films. I'm the Transformers kid. You know, it felt very intimidating walking into... look who's up here. This is a very intimidating squad. It's the Kill Squad. And I felt like I was playing with the All-Star team. And I was coming out of a place in my life. It was pretty dark. I didn't have a whole lot of confidence personally. And I felt the only way I could have confidence, which is the only job requirement for these men, was to be as astute as I possibly could. These men embraced me because they embraced Oliver. And so I learned a lot really quickly. You know, Brolin's actually a traitor, and we were sending each other P&L reports for a good minute there. And then it's not about actor. It's not, you know, he's Josh Brolin and I'm me. You know, that can be intimidating, but when it's about numbers, it becomes very eye to eye. You know, it's just about how much money you're making that week. And, you know, that made it easier for me. It made it so that it was not so, you know, it made it so that it was surmountable, you know, and... in terms of my investment, I invested at the beginning. I don't want to get into numbers because I get in trouble, but I did very well. And not necessarily because of my intellect, but because I entered the market at an incredible time. We started making this movie, the market was on a direct climb and really didn't really let up until last Thursday when we had the flash crash. So, you know, I was just lucky in terms of the timing we had a lot of people who were actually, you know... Frank sat with George Soros. I mean, you know, he's one of the sages of finance. And, you know, we were very welcomed in this world because of the success of the first film, which I don't think the players on the first film had the same opportunities. So we were blessed in that regard.
Except by the big banks. The big banks were very arrogant and said no. Mm. They wouldn't even let us in. But oddly enough, the Royal Bank of Canada did cooperate with us, and the Royal Bank of Canada gave us their floor to shoot on. And they were the one bank, Canada was one of the few countries that escaped this debacle because the banks played straight by a different set of rules. So it was interesting that the Royal Bank of Canada let us in, whereas the Goldmans of the world just shut their doors.
We got in anyway, though. We I snuck in.
Yeah, you got in. That's right.
A couple places that wouldn't let us in.
We also talked, by the way, to one night we had dinner with about very interesting dinner with 15 young people, about 20. Citibank people, and that place took a real hit. But they were talking about how they had just come out of business school and 2 years on the floor, and they were in that moment of crisis, it was like, I guess, a Pearl Harbor of some kind, and they turned to their leaders, the older people, and their leaders were freaked out and were saying, "We don't, what's going on?" They said, "We don't know." So at that moment, they were baptized, if you remember, and that's mm-hmm. where I think Shai got a lot of confidence from that, because he listened to that. These kids were new to the biggest crash in the history of next to the Depression of Wall Street, and they learned, as they say in Vietnam, you know, training on the ground, you know.
Here, then here first, here, and then Mr. Friedman over there.
Hello, I'm Sandra from Serbia, from Belgrade. Question for Mr. Douglas. As the ambassador of United Nations, you support many charities. And tell me, what is on the top of your list right now?
I focus on disarmament. I'm a UN messenger of peace. Each of us have our areas, and it's a very important and crucial time. We had the START agreements going on between Russia and the U.S. and a reduction in weapons, not as much as we'd like. There was a nuclear posture review that President Obama had, and the Non-Proliferation Treaty has just been under review in the United Nations, followed by the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. So you really have an opportunity after 64 years of a dramatic reduction in weapons. You've got organizations talking about zero and schedules coming out. So this is something that I'm really very excited about. I'm working with our senators in trying to ratify first the START agreement and also trying to speak to some other countries to come on board the Non-Proliferation Treaty. India and Pakistan are having meetings actually next week. So it could be an exciting time. There seems to be a coalition. A lot of momentum is building from both the left and the right.
Ma'am, and then the gentleman over there.
Alessandra Magliaro, press agency Italian ANSA. It's a question to Oliver Stone. In your movie, you show next financial bubble, color green. It's true? Color green. Green economy. It's.
I think that's very interesting. Shai didn't cover that. I think it's part of the Shia has a morality there at the beginning. He is trying to build an energy company, an alternate clean energy company, based on some research that we did. It may be one of the ways, one of the techniques, but certainly this is a huge demand right now. We have to, this would be a productive use of Wall Street for social ends. It would be raising money for these companies, for startups and so forth, to get this thing going. And we don't have as an aggressive policy like China has, which is government dominated, government inspired. Our government is still slow out of the docks. It's getting there a little bit closer, but this is what Wall Street can do. And instead, I hate to say it, but, you know, 40% of the American corporate profits went to financial companies. But they were most, and if you look at Goldman, 70% of their profits came from their trading for themselves, not for their clients. They weren't raising money for these energy companies. They weren't contributing to the overall health of our economy. They were trying to make money for themselves based on a new set of rules that allowed them to make a lot of money. That's horrible. It's not what it's for. The banks originally were not what they are now, but they were the banks, the brokerage houses, these were agentary functions, and that was what my father did. He was an agent for other people, and that was the right thing, and now it became the agents are in control, and it was crazy. The whole system has reached a disproportion, and even Mr. Greenspan, Alan Greenspan, has admitted that it was an irrational exuberance. Well, and moral hazard and so forth and so on. But there is a morality here, and I think that's what he runs in. I don't think Shia got into it, but when he runs up against Shia and Kerry, he runs up against Michael and Kerry, there's a whole different dimension. He wants the daughter to come together with the father, but at the same time, he seems to want something else, too. He wants money, and he wants revenge. And he uses Michael the way saying Michael uses him to get back to Kerry. Kerry is not the moral center because she may be at the end emotionally, but I do believe that Kerry, the way Michael sees Kerry, is he sees her as having screwed him. because he wasn't at that very first scene. She was not there at the prison, and she'd made a deal. She was supposed to give him the money, and that was the way he understood it with her. So he feels justified in what he does in his behavior, and I think there is, each character has their reasons.
Sir?
Roger Friedman from the Daily News in New York. First question is for Oliver.
Where are you?
I'm over here.
Thank you.
I'm speaking for this side of the room. We haven't had any questions. Oliver, the movie's really great, and you cast all these terrific people like Eli Wallach and Sylvia Miles. I thought you could, and Frank Langella, who we love. Can you talk a little bit about that? And the other question, maybe for Ed Pressman, too, is this movie was supposed to come out in April, and now it's here, getting a lot of press, but it's not going to come out till the fall. Do you think that, because it's so topical, it should just, I felt like it should really be coming out right now and not waiting so long?
Well, the danger is if you chase the news, you're never going to be satisfied. I mean, we would have come out normally the week that Goldman was indicted for short selling. That was, you know, what's so what? I mean, that's not going to really, the news is going to be there forever. It's going to go on for this next year. The fourth quarter historically in Wall Street is far more volatile. So we will be coming out right in the storm, I think, September 23rd, internationally pretty much. I think it's much better, and I think Khan is a much better introduction point for us. I like it, and we get more time to work on the film. We got 3 more weeks, so that's the way I see it. And as to Sylvia Miles, she was in the original, and she's still walking around, as you know, and she's got that sassy intelligence. She told me that they would all crack up on garage sale. I don't know about that line, but also Eli Wallach was a treat for all of us to work with too, because you know Eli is. He's Eli, you know, and he came up with his little own signature whistle there from one of his Western movies, which I loved, and we incorporated it.
Yeah, that was great. Ed, you wanted to comment on that?
I think
Oliver said it.
I think Oliver's. I agree with his sentiment.
Well, I was going to say, I think it is a marketing dilemma. And one should not think, because Wall Street is in the news, that it necessarily helps our movie. It really has to be a separation. This movie's got a lot of other things going on about it other than simply Wall Street. So I think for the marketers, that is going to be the dilemma. How do you make an audience think that they haven't already seen the movie on television, watching the news every night?
We'll take just a few more questions. Go ahead, sir.
Rodrigo from O Globo Brasil. It's a question to Mr. Douglas. Besides acting, you made history as a producer. As a producer, I would like to know, are you able to identify impacts of the crisis upon Hollywood? How did the crisis affect Hollywood?
Which crisis is that? The economic crisis? Well, I don't know if it's been directly affected by the Wall Street crisis, but over a period of time, economics have made a disparity between, i.e., studio movies, most of which are at $70 million or more, that have advertising and marketing budgets of $30 or $40 million or more dollars, and your independent pictures, which are down under $15 million. And the dilemma with those is most of the time they sell the movie to foreign territories to get the budget to make the movie. Then they cannot get an American distributor because they don't have enough money to market the film. So I've never quite understood why a foreign country will take an English-speaking American film and have enough money to show it in theaters, whereas it cannot be done in the States. So it's a bad situation right now. It's a huge disparity. I think it's cleaned out, you know, a lot of maybe mediocre independent films, but it's not a good sign for the future.
Ma'am?
My name is Jasmine Tahazeki. I'm from Egypt, representing the Egyptian television. First, I would like to congratulate you all for a fascinating movie. I really, really enjoyed it on the personal level, and I'm sure it's going to be internationally also very well received. My question is, Mr. Stone, would you consider coming to Egypt, maybe filming something in Egypt, a movie? And to all of you, renowned stars, How are you influenced by the, on the personal level, influenced by the moral and aspect? And if you are personally, I mean, does this change your lives somehow when you, by the roles that you play in a movie?
That's a very good question. You should ask them. I have no plans to shoot in Egypt. It's difficult. You know, the infrastructure there is difficult, and it's. I'm very involved right now with three documentaries that I'm trying to finish, including The Secret History of the United States, which is 10 hours long, which is probably the most ambitious project of my life. And I have a South of the Border documentary on the changes in Ebola in South America and in all through the region through eight countries, which is coming out next month. And I also have I did a third interview with Castro right before we shot Wall Street, and that's going to be coming out. It's called Castro in Winter. And it's a small, you know, it's a man in his twilight years, twilight life, and he's 84 years old, and he was in wonderful mental condition, and he's still, but ailing physically, but still strong. It was a wonderful interview. So I have those three things really taking up a lot of time. Thank you, ma'am. Ask if you want to.
As for the actors, were you ever marked indelibly by a part that you have played?
I played George W. Bush, and I'm still confused.
That's a great line. Thank you, John.
I played Richard Nixon, and I'm not.
Ma'am?
Farah Nayeri from Bloomberg News. Question for Oliver Stone. I understand that you may be toying with the idea of doing a film about the years in between. Is that seriously something that you are considering, and or does it depend on how well this one does?
You mean in Wall Street years?
Yeah.
Oh, no. No, I was perhaps kidding yesterday when I said the only one would be a meek. This would be a, no, because Douglas would have to be younger.
Who has the microphone? Go ahead.
Sabine Schulz, German Television, ZDF. A question for Michael Douglas. Gordon Gekko was meant as a bad guy, but actually became an idol. Did you see the sequel as a possibility to correct that image? And how would you describe the focus of Money Never Sleeps and the message? Is it the end of capitalism?
Well, I think Oliver and I were both pretty stunned after the first one. How they perceived Gekko, an insider trader, a guy who destroyed companies, destroyed people, was a very, very well-written villain, and people are attracted to villains. We just never anticipated that all these MBAs, these people in business school would just be ranting and raving that this was the person that they wanted to be. And yet, you know, 22 years later, I imagine that a lot of those MBA students are heading up these investment banking companies now because the greed has not stopped. It got legal. It's become legal. This time around, I think, again, Oliver was right. Rather than starting him off in the same style and dress, it was really an opportunity to take him from the bottom and make it a little more of a question. I mean, the biggest issue I get about this film, about Gordon, well, has he changed? And we leave that sort of ambivalent. And was he a changed man? You don't know until the end.
Ma'am?
Hi, Francesca Litton from ABS-CBN in the Philippines, also from CFI. My question is for Michael Douglas. You just talked about change when it comes to Gordon Gekko. That question is left hanging until the end. But in terms of Gordon Gekko himself, what would he have retained in those 20 years he was in prison? What would not have changed for Gordon Gekko that is integral to his character?
His hostility and anger against Josh's character probably is deep seated as the man who put him there. and his analysis of what's happened, knowing that he can't be involved, he's going to be in the sidelines afterwards. He's probably thinking more in an analytical way, and his book that he writes when he comes out is pretty accurate as to what goes down.
Sir?
Hello, Ernesto Garrat from Chile. A question to Oliver Stone. I want a few words, please, about your father. He was a Wall Street guy, and if the character of Frank Langella was inspiring this in your father in a way, because he's a decent guy.
No, Frank's character is based more on people from Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers, and he's right. I mean, Richard Fuld, F-U-L-D, was a villain in a way. He was just a... But I don't think Frank is as bad as Richard Fuld was, but he did run the company into the ground. And he, as he says to Shia at one point in the park, he says, there's a lot more here than you know. There's a lot more going on than you're aware of. So my father was a different type of style. He was 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s. And he actually ended up, he was a real broker and he was an economist and he wrote letters, economic letters, for publication, but he ended up working ironically for Sandy Weill. Sandy Weill was the mega business entrepreneur who formed the basis of Citicorp by merging American Express at one point and insurance companies and banks and into a banking. He killed the glass wall. He broke down the glass wall. He put the brokerage houses and merged them into banks. He made one of the first financial supermarkets out of Citicorp. My father was working for him when he died. But the world changed. My father was an honest man, I thought, and I still think so. And he believed in serving his clients. That's gone. There's no clients, except unless you have a lot of money. Nobody wants to take you. I had an old schoolmate who became a big shot at Morgan Stanley. I remember in 1999, he was the head of Morgan Stanley. I won't tell you his name, but I asked him if he could make some investments for me, and he said, there's not enough there, basically. It's that kind of an attitude that was arrogant that pervaded the entire Wall Street area.
Go ahead.
Harlan Jacobson from TalkCinema.com. I'm glad that gentleman asked that question, because since this is a movie about fathers, in which fathers play a significant part, both you, Oliver, and you, Ed, are connected to Wall Street through perhaps the New York Stock Exchange and other things. I wonder what the text of the conversations you had with your fathers over time about their belief in the market system and your questioning of it, and how you think about that now as you've gotten older, and what their views might have been about the way in which the market has gone and the way in which you have gone. And I'd also like to ask Michael Douglas, what do you feel that you owe to your father for your entry and your that helps you in your career in the business?
Do you want to start, Ed?
My father was in the toy business, and my stepfather, who knew Lou Stone, Oliver's father, was a broker in the same sort of tradition as Lou. He was a trader. He wore a flower in his lapel every day and had a kind of style of elegance of the old Wall Street, and it was a very personal kind of business in the way things were. It was very different from today, and we never discussed the philosophical aspects of his job. He was very proud of what he did, and the institution of the New York Stock Exchange was the center of the universe then, which it isn't right now.
Michael.
Computers took over. I mean, my father was dealing with computers at the end of his life, you know, and it was very complicated to him. He was not comfortable with that, and he was used to the paper. There was also a big firewall between analysis and the sellers on the floor, the traders. In other words, the research departments really were research departments, and it somewhere along the line, the research departments just were subsumed by the production departments, and they like Bush did with Iraq. You know, they shifted the intelligence to match what they wanted to hear. So the whole thing is frightening. And my father would roll over in his grave if that old cliche is true. I don't know. What do you think, Frank?
He would roll over in his grave.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
No, I don't know what it means, roll over in your grave. But anyway, Michael.
I think I had the advantage of being second generation, which allows you to watch your father as a movie star conduct his life. You see his friends were stars. You get to see the insecurities, the vulnerabilities of people. You see how you conduct yourself to the public. I watched him as an actor and as a producer work on material, which I think was very beneficial for me. And the only thing I think I specifically owe him was the fact that he initially bought the rights to One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which ended up playing a crucial part in my life.
On that note, I'm afraid our time is up. Thank you all for being here today.
Michael. Vengono alle compagnie petrolifere. Perché non si è pensato e non si pensa di tassare con dei tassi appunto più alti, di tassare maggiormente questi utili che sono utili, che vengono chiamati windfall, sono utili che provengono praticamente non da un incremento del valore dell'azienda, ma provengono soltanto dal fatto che per esempio è aumentato il prezzo del petrolio e quindi queste aziende hanno incassato di più e quindi hanno fatto più utili. Perché nessuno pensa di aumentare la tassazione su questo tipo di utili? C'è stato un aumento degli utili da parte di queste società, un aumento degli utili da parte delle banche, un aumento degli utili da parte delle compagnie di assicurazione, ma queste non vengono tassate, quindi non vengono poi restituite. E in realtà c'è stata l'ulteriore beffa da parte, cioè siamo stati fottuti due volte, perché c'è stata l'ulteriore beffa attraverso una decisione della Corte Suprema che ha stabilito che appunto le multinazionali godono degli stessi diritti di quelli di cui godono i singoli cittadini, quindi adesso loro possono partecipare alle elezioni, possono investire e foraggiare qualsiasi candidato vogliano e lo possono fare tranquillamente dando tutti i soldi che pensano di voler.
You're still typing.
Yeah.
You can't write that
I
fast.
Beat him. I'll go fast.
Okay.
Thank
grazie
you.
A Oliver Stone, grazie a voi e buona Thank giornata you. Naturalmente.
I love that outfit. What does he work for? You know?
Perché per quale giornale lavora?
Sì, adesso mi presento.
He's telling us now, I don't know. Per quale giornale? Ce lo dica Sicily, che va di corso. Scommetto che è siciliano,
Sicily.
No, Neapolitan.
Thank you.
RadioCinema.it